Hey everyone, welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort. And without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Hey everyone, Made for Music is coming to you live Tuesday, April 7th at the Ballard Homestead featuring Katie Cuffell and Dame. It is going to be a phenomenal evening of interviews and performances. It's the first ever live show, so come on out, grab your tickets. It's a great opportunity for you to just enjoy some music, but also learn about the music scene from the artistry to the business. We're going to be talking DIY touring, booking, promoting, recording, all that great stuff. Truly hope to see you there. And without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast hails from River City, Iowa. From a young age, she was an archaeological music digger, spending many late nights watching MTV sessions. And then she escaped the cornfields for college in Minneapolis, where she got involved with the college radio station and went on to book shows, write for various music publications, and then took a detour to Scotland, where she became a true marketing and PR hustler at Saddle Creek Records. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is just the prelude. She landed in Seattle just over 4 years ago, working at Sonic Boom Records, immediately began volunteering at KEXP morning on Mondays, while also interning with the business support and underwriting department. And this has led to her own show every Wednesday on KEXP from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. So please welcome the manager of Actors and Tiny Deaths, Abby Gobley.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks again for taking the time. That's quite the resume. Didn't even get to jump into like most of the stuff, but so what is archaeological music digging?
Oh, well, so I grew up in a very small town in Iowa, and there's not a lot to do in like tiny Mason City. Like River City is the nickname for Mason City.
Oh, right.
Because its little claim to fame is the Music Man. Like the guy who wrote it, Meredith Wilson, grew up there, and that's like, we're like, yeah, we're a music town. But also I was constantly like in my basement watching MTV music videos at 3 a.m. and discovering like Bjork and like Muse, and like I would just dig through the internet and be like, oh my gosh, all these bands, I love them. Cause I couldn't stop. It just became a passion.
So you were from an early age where doing this thing at night, like 3 a.m. spinning records.
Oh, yeah, has been like when I was like 11, I was like that girl who walked to this record store, CDGB's. It was in the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, Iowa. That was the last place Buddy Holly played. I remember going to the record store and being like, hi, do you have Bjork? And I was like, I think I pronounced it right. And the guy's like, oh, you mean Bjork? And if he did not like deliver it in such a nice manner, I would have been horrified. But I was still horrified because I'm like 11, 12.
Right.
And yeah, he like sold me her whole discography at the point, like really cheap. He's like, yeah, here you go. Because who in Iowa is probably like
dishing out Bjork records?
Yeah, to like preteens. So yeah.
Very cool. And so how often were you doing that then? Like just finding records and staying up late and spinning those?
Oh, just constantly throughout middle school and high school. And it was just always an interest to me. And I was really heavily involved in music in school too. Like I was in choir, and also it kind of leaked into when I was in theater. I was in a children's theater company for a while.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And yeah, little brief musical theater thing. But mostly I just found myself just constantly like trying to keep up with these tiny blogs, like I can't even name any of them anymore, but right. Remember the website Pure Volume?
Yes.
I used to like download tracks from there all the time and like find bands. I remember finding like My Brightest Diamond on there. That's like the only thing I can think of, but like I just wanted music because there was no live music coming to Mason City, Iowa. So, except in Clear Lake, Iowa, I had my first concert, but it was like an alternative press kind of band. Remember that publication?
Yeah.
They're still around, but it was more like a Warped Tour situation. It was like the X's and Smile Empty Soul. And I only went because like my friends, my older friends brought me. But I was constantly just digging for more things. I just wanted to be involved.
Right. And so did you know at that point you wanted to pursue something in music, or were you just like, I love this and want more of it?
Yeah, I just loved it. And I never really thought of it as a career. Well, I guess I did. I was very like stuck on, I'm going to be an actress and I'm going to maybe do something in sound design.
Oh,
like
okay.
I loved like mixing like my own weird field recordings. And yeah, but I was also reading Spin magazine all the time, and I just wanted to write like them.
So you knew about all of this at a pretty young age then, of
yeah,
all these different outlets and whatnot.
Exactly.
That's awesome. And so did you know like what that path looked like, or were you just like, I know I want to get here?
I just knew I wanted to get out of Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I was taking classes in journalism and stuff in high school, and I just was like trying to write more about music as well, but like I never knew how to get into that. Mm-hmm. I thought, I have to go to New York.
Yeah.
Like little Abby's like, I just want to see the lights, you know? And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to go there? But, you know, school's expensive, and the next best thing was Minneapolis, and that music scene's insane.
Yeah,
like you have First Avenue. That's, I mean, it's the promised land of Prince, as I joke about it, but it's true. Like, So after I graduated high school, I briefly went to school in Iowa for a minute, but then I transferred like immediately to Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I have to be here. All I want to do is go to concerts, is kind of what was a weird driving force.
Yeah.
And great theater scene too. So.
Oh, actually, I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
Very cool. And did you know that you had a gift for like curating music at this point, just because of how actively you were looking for stuff?
I guess I did, because all my friends would be like, wait, what's that thing you played me? Can you just like burn me a CD? So it was always like burning CDs for friends back and forth. And I'd be like, just listen to this.
Right.
I got you. It's like my own garden state made me like, here, just listen to the Shins.
That's awesome. So when you transferred then, did you immediately like jump into radio, or what did that transition look like of you landing in Minneapolis?
Yeah. I guess my transition, I was just trying to get involved in theater and just try and figure out my college degree, but I just kept finding myself at First Avenue, which is like just the premier venue. Like I was like, oh, the first thing I did, I remember, was kind of see like a Matt and Kim concert. And then I was buying more concert tickets than actually theater tickets.
Uh-huh.
So it didn't really like, you know, evolve into me going up to the radio station until about a year in.
Okay.
Like in the theater building, the radio station, Radio K, is at the top floor. And I didn't know this until like one of my best friends, Shelby, was like, dude, you should just go volunteer up there. Like
walk on up.
Yeah. So I did. Like I walked on up, and they're like, oh, how do you want to get involved? And they're like, we do in studios here. We want to get involved with that. And I'm like, yeah. They're like, cool, the drums are coming this week. Do you want to do something with that? Do you want to like interview them? We desperately need people to interview. And I was like,
wow,
I want to interview the drums.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did that. And Radio K is kind of similar to KEXP in that they've been doing these sessions forever, and they video them. And yeah, I interviewed the drums. Somehow my neck turned beet red instead of my face. And like when I was so embarrassed, like during it. And then they were like, you okay? Like, I'm like, I'm good. They're like, this interview was great. Thanks. And I was like, cool. And then like literally that weekend, Shearwater was in, and I interviewed them. And I just started interviewing bands there. And yeah, Radio K was great. And then I did DJ training, got my own show. And yeah.
That's awesome. So what does that look like? I've actually never heard of like DJ training. So what does that kind of entail, and how does one seek that kind of stuff out?
Well, especially in a campus radio station, it was especially one like Radio K. They had like a training director who just said, hey, this is how this goes. Like with their format, they're like, we want to play new music, but we also want to pair it alongside, you know, old music as well. And what was great is like Radio K could just be a reflection of whatever you liked. So had rotation, like new music to play. So we would do that, but then you could just kind of do a free for all. But it was also trying to teach you like how to do air breaks, which is, you know, just like, you know, in between you do this back sell. So you just name all the tracks that you played. But then as my advisor, Sarah, would say, she's like, you know, you just need the creamy filling, add some fun, like facts about things. Also call out the radio station. Like we would be like, Radio K, Real College Radio.
Yeah, nice.
And it was, looking back at it now, I'm like, oh yeah, that was like, it was really just training for what I'm doing now. So yeah.
Very cool. And so that was in Minneapolis, correct? Mm. And so how long was it between like getting started in radio there and then you're like detour to Glasgow then?
Yeah. So I did a lot of interviews and then I decided to study abroad and I went to the Glasgow School of Art and then I loved bands from Glasgow. And in my head, I was like, well, I just want to go there. I want to study there because they have a great music scene.
Yeah.
Because nice. As you can see, most of my moving throughout my life has been dictated by, do they have a good music scene?
Right.
And Glasgow does. I mean, like, it's, you know, like, yeah, Franz Ferdinand from there, which was my favorite. Nice. Like, at the time, I'm like, I just want to go where they've been. And a couple of the members went to the Glasgow School of Art.
Oh, wow. No yeah. way.
So I'm like, that's a good school. I'll get in there. And it's also, it's really cool. Uh-huh. So I went there and I reached out to that blog, the Pop Cop, which was mm-hmm. run by like really good friends of mine, Jason and Erica. And they introduced me to all the new bands that were coming around. Nice. They like met up with me. I interviewed them for Radio K back at home.
Right on.
I was just like, guys, I'm just going to interview bands over here and send you content. Is that cool? And they're like, wow, that's really above and beyond, Abby. Go for it.
Yeah.
And so I interviewed them. They introduced me to Frightened Rabbit, who was like, you okay. know, just starting like to get up there. And then a new band called Churches, who had just released one track called
No
Lies.
Way.
Yeah, it was insane. And they had just played their first show when I was there. And I was like, you know, looking back on it now, I'm like, dang,
yeah.
this is crazy. So yeah, I got it. I just kind of went to different shows of like bands that were coming up and got a lot of great memories. And just, it's just, I'm fascinated by how different music communities around the world,
yeah.
just, you know, how they work together.
And not to jump too far ahead, but I guess yeah. then what took you from there to Seattle? And then the follow-up would be, how would you juxtapose those three scenes? Like,
oh, geez.
Minneapolis.
Yeah. Well, from Scotland, I mean, I went back to Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. But then I was briefly kind of with Omaha. So uh-huh. it's like, I don't know. What I find in common with, I guess I'll say, with all of these music scenes that I've been in, everyone has the same passion to, like, bring community about music, which mm-hmm. is amazing.
Right.
And I guess different wise, like, yeah, I don't know. Everyone has like their genres and also their like heroes that they look up to as mm-hmm. well. Like Minneapolis looks up to Prince, the Replacements, and then like Seattle's grunge.
Yeah.
And Omaha, like, was like, you know, there's Saddle Creek artists there. And then in Glasgow, it's like, well, you got everyone to look up to. Like, I think Aztec Camera's from Edinburgh, but like, it's kind of like those scenes kind of go back and forth.
Right. Because they're much closer geographically, right?
Yeah. They're like mm-hmm. an hour train ride.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, yeah, you had Franz Ferdinand that really took off, but like, you had the Twilight Sad that was like just about to go off. And it was just constantly like legends walking around.
Right.
But there's something, I don't know. I felt like Glasgow was a bit more of I was a bit more starry-eyed about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you, even in Seattle, you I mean, you could run into somebody, but it's like so big, you're not likely to run into Mike McCready, even though he's pretty involved.
Yeah, around, like, but I saw like Eddie Vedder once at Easy Street, and I was like, there's that guy. Yeah. And, but there's just something like Glasgow is super involved, like, in all aspects. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. There's just so much history there that they can't ignore it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when you came back, then you mentioned you dropped, or you went back to Minneapolis, but then you were involved with Saddle Creek. So what did that look like? Did you seek them out, or how did you get introduced to them?
So when I came back from Scotland, I had still some school to finish at the University of Minnesota, and I became music director at Radio K. Very so cool. I just was kind of in charge of their programming music-wise, and also I booked the in studios there. Cool. And one of the first sessions I booked was Icky Blossoms, who are featured members of Tilly and the Wall.
Okay.
If you remember that, I love Tilly and the Wall, and I love Icky Blossoms, and they were one of the first bands I booked as music director, and they were on Saddle Creek. And what's weird about Radio K is it's insane how involved that like a campus radio station is. Like they had like over 30,000 listeners, and like I didn't think, you know, I just thought, oh, every campus radio station must be like this. I met Saddle Creek through that, because a lot of labels would talk directly to me, because as a music director, when you're picking music, you have office hours where radio promoters will call you or contact you. And then also labels like Sub Pop would call me like every once in a while and be like, cool, these are records, these are releases, watch for these. Saddle Creek did something similar. And then from there, I just formed good relationships with everybody. And then one day, CMJ, it doesn't exist anymore, but this College Music Journal Conference, it was kind of like South by Southwest, but in New York.
Cool.
And they approached me there, and they're like, oh, hey, like, ever thought about working in a label? And I was like, what? And I was like, you're joking.
Yeah.
Like, because I remember emailing them once when I was like in high school being like, can I intern for you guys? I love Bright Eyes. they're like, it's really great working with you. Like, we're looking to add another person to the label team. What would you want to do? And I'm like, they're asking me to work for them, and also what I want to do.
Yeah.
Like, what? So my senior year in school, they took me on as a marketing and press coordinator. So I did a lot of stuff with that, and
very cool. And I guess taking like a half step back, that music director role you were talking about, what is that? You kind of mentioned you've got the office hours and you're being contacted.
Yeah.
I guess, A, what does that look like as far as the responsibilities? And then how does like campus radio music director role align to that of like a mainstream station or a KEXP, for example?
It's literally a kind of a training to be like a music director elsewhere. Like my mentor at the time, what was great is Radio K set up mentorship programs.
Oh, very cool.
I know. It was great. And the music director at a radio station in Minneapolis called The Current, he was previously at Radio K and was music director there. Now he was music director at The Current.
Uh-huh.
And I would just talk with him and be like, is this similar to what you do? He's like, it basically was like kind of training for me to do what I'm doing now. And I'm like, that's crazy.
Just a matter of scale then?
Or? Yeah, it's a matter of scale, because like, you know, they have, that's, you know, triple A radio, which, you know, adult alternative stuff, where it's just like a whole different market. Mm-hmm. Whereas like college radio, it's still like, what's great about it, there's this freedom in it. And like, you know, you're getting so many submissions. Like my inbox now is very similar to what it was in college when I was there. And yeah, I just listened to everything. And then I would try and, you know, make sure that every Friday our rotation was up to date, so that we had the newest music. And I also would like, you know, a lot new singles throughout the week, because I'm like, I want us to be able to play it first. I got competitive.
That's awesome. I guess, how does from the DJ perspective, or I guess music director perspective, what is it that you look for when putting this together? Like, how important is like a flow? Like, I think a band putting together a set list,
yeah,
and whatnot. Is there a similar approach to that when you're like putting together a program or a segment, or is it just I'm gonna play whatever feels good and roll?
Yeah,
with it?
I guess like as a music director, when like shaping the sound for DJs, I let the DJs do whatever, because nice. You know, that's the spirit of college radio.
Yeah.
But yet, I through the new music I picked, it was kind of shaping like a sound, a flow, because I, you know, whatever the current was playing, I didn't want us to play that. Like, yeah. I wanted to be differentiated from that. And, you know, but that's also like the college radio spirit. Like, yeah. I just want to play the underground stuff. You know, I remember adding some weird like R&S records stuff to like rotation, being like, here's some industrial techno, throw it in heavy. Like, you know, just like, I, you know, I just wanted all the weird genres to be in there. So, yeah.
And how did you find the response was, especially with like a college market, for example? Because yeah, there is the option they could technically just turn on like the AAA radio. So what was the response to that of, hey, we're really keeping our ear to the ground of like the up and coming stuff? Like, did you feel a response from the audience when y'all were doing that and just keeping things super fresh?
Oh, totally. Like during our pledge drives, people would be like, I just love that. I keep wanting to say KEXP because I've been there so long, yeah. But I'm like, but yeah, like at Radio K, like people would just be like, I just love like when the DJ comes on and like plays this random thing from the 80s, but next to like Lightning Bolt. I love that because it's fresh. It's like a variety. Like, you know, the surprise was great. And you could also see that response in the shows that we would like have. Like we would sponsor shows at multiple venues in Minneapolis or St. Paul. And like, I remember like we played like Juju. I love that band. They're so great. And like sold, like you just would see all the listeners there. And like, how did they discover it? It's because they would discover it from Radio K. Because like, who's playing Juju like on the radio? And I think people should, because it's a great band,
right?
But you know, you would just find it in people showing up for shows, and then also we would have in studios and like people, just listeners responding and actually requesting that stuff. So it was cool.
Did you see a response from bands as well? Like, for example, like the Juju's are coming to town and they're like, holy crud, like all these people know who we are.
Yeah.
Did you kind of, and did they pinpoint that it was the radio station that was playing them or the shows that you're putting on, I guess?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, like within studios, like people be like, hey, this is cool that like, especially like up and coming bands. I used to do a local show there and it was like, if we can get an in studio at Radio K, that's like video content that people can discover you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool to be like bands being so excited to be in there. Like, I'm trying to think of an example, but like, cause there's just so many bands that came through. Like I keep thinking of the Growlers when they came through. That was really funny.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, this place is cool. And, a college radio station does this. It was just like a cool discovery point. Like that wasn't just like us playing them. So,
That's awesome. And so you were there and you were simultaneously working for Saddle Creek then your senior year.
Yes.
And I guess what did that look like? Because you mentioned you're doing marketing and PR.
Yeah.
And so how did that shift your perspective going from, okay, I'm the music director here to then a lot of the more outbound communication?
Yeah. It was kind of just the guys at Saddle Creek are great and would just kind of help me along. They're like, you know, maybe do this, do that. Because I was like, oh my God. Like I was like 22 when they hired me and I was like, here comes the imposter syndrome. I don't know if I'm doing this right. But also what was nice was because of all the connections I made at Radio K with like other labels, I would also like hit up other people being like, am I doing okay? This is what marketing is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, yeah, but you're doing great. Right. But it was definitely like on the PR side, like, okay, Abby, what are the blogs that are going up right now? Who do I hit up? Like, okay, I have like, I remember I was working with artists like Pujol or like the Bright Eyes Christmas reissue. Like, what outlets want to talk about this.
Yeah.
And then on the marketing side, it was like, cool, what content can I like make? Like, Pujol, who's this awesome rocker, from Tennessee, he was also just a really great visual artist. So like we made a lizard mask to like, that would like sit in the vinyl to go with his record. Cause
no
it was very
way.
Him and very part of his concept of that record. And it was just cool to like be able to make it more like bringing like my arts background in and being like, okay, let's make this fun.
Yeah.
So.
That's awesome. And did you find it helpful that you had that music director role? Were you able to go, okay, I know what would get my attention from like inbound stuff and then applying that to others? Did you find that that worked at all?
Like marketing wise? Like,
yeah. Or just like hitting up a station to be like, hey, I'm working with this artist or, you know, pitching and stuff like that.
Totally. Like, I mean, cause like I was going for a certain sound and like, and but I would listen to everything. And if I like it, I'm going to play it. Mm-hmm. So like, the best way to get people's attention was like, you know, making those one sheets, but also, I remember at Saddle Creek, I was like, okay, we need to redo our one sheets. Cause I was like, you don't need to put that much information.
Right.
Like, it was interesting because you learn less is more.
Totally.
Cause I'm like, you don't need to write me a novel. Like, I don't have time. Like I have 15,000 emails in my inbox right now and I'm trying.
You could have the greatest story in the world, but no time.
Exactly. But if you have a couple great tracks, like I just want to listen to them quick and then I'll read your story. So it was just interesting to see like how that flipped on the label side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess for artists that are self-pitching or anyone who is interested in like representing a band, from your perspective, what is that ideal one sheet look like for on the receiving end for you?
Oh yeah. I mean, just a brief bio, like, and then also the tracks that you like the most, like you may have like a 14 track LP, but like, give me a couple focus tracks to start with just so I get an idea of where you're at. It doesn't have to be like the single, you know, sometimes people are like, but I must have a single. And I'm like, yeah, but if I like the couple tracks that you told me to listen to, and then I'll listen to the full record. And also, if you have tour dates coming up, let me know. Like if you are making the effort to get yourself out there, that's a huge win, especially like on the label side too. Like, you gotta let people know it's all selling yourself too.
Yeah. And then when receiving like 15,000 emails, I guess what is a good subject line look like, and what is a bad subject line? If you're like, okay, 15,000 emails, which am I going to open?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like your band name, what's going out. Release dates are really great so that I can like, if you're sending me something that's coming out in December and it's June right now, I mean, I don't want to accidentally leak your track.
Yeah.
I like, some people will just go ahead and play it. Like other DJs have done that, but I'm like, I just want to respect like, you know, your timeline dates. Cause like on the label side, like that's my label brain coming in. But, you know, like, if you have something that you want to, like, premiere right away, like, let me know. Like, also, the worst subject lines are, I got one that said literally no subject on it. And I'm just like, I'm not going to open that.
Is that spam? Exactly.
And, like, but, like, I saw that it was, like, someone's bio. And I'm like, come on. Like, and also, if you spell my first name wrong, like, I know that you don't listen to my show and that you don't care. Because, like, it's not that hard. It says it like in my email. It's like, it's there. Like, it's just common courtesy things.
Totally.
That's all. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
So
versus like the whole copy paste message.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like you can copy.
Hi, Jeff.
Yeah. It's like you can copy paste, but it's like, you know, if it's like, hi, Abigail, I'm like, that's not my name. Like, you know, it's just common things. But like, you know, if it's short and sweet, if you have links also in your email, just link it. Like, some people will also send downloads right away, but sometimes if I can just get a like a private link to your SoundCloud and then please put a download with the email. But if I can just quickly listen to it, because like the amount I download on my poor laptop, like I have one of those like crazy, like 3 terabyte, like, you know, externals. And I'm like, I'm trying to keep it all up, but it's so much easier for me to quickly.
Right. Just like stream it super quick and then see, okay, cool.
Cool. I like this. Awesome. I'll download it and play it, you know?
Nice. Awesome. So you're working at Saddle Creek.
Yes.
Senior year. After that year, did you then go work Saddle Creek full time, or what did that transition?
Yeah,
look like?
I was working full time for Saddle Creek while I was in school.
Oh my gosh! Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I had like literally like two classes left. Like I extended, like I went an extra like semester at the U of M because like I was double majoring and in like psychology and theater. And yeah. I was like, okay, guys, I got to finish my degree. And they're like, okay, cool. When you're done, come on down. So I was like at Saddle Creek for like a little less than a year, but I learned a lot, like going to South by Southwest. Like, oh my God. Also trying to have to explain to your professors, hey, so I'm missing class for a week because of work. And they're like, where are you going? And I'm like, Austin. For South by Southwest. And they're like,
oh, working.
Work. And I'm like, no, literally, I did the thing I was supposed to do. I got a full-time job, but it was while I'm in school. And they're like, uh-huh. So it's like me at South by Southwest, but taking a break to write my theater historiography paper. Like, it was just like, it was a lot of that. But also, you know, you just learn to go around and literally try and do that network thing. I hate using the word network.
Right.
It just sounds like, ugh. But yeah, you end up just kind of going around and introducing yourself is what I learned at South By and seeing what everyone's up to. And that was like a whole eye-opener thing because I had never, like, CMJ is one thing, but this was like a weird, like, here you go.
Yeah,
you're out
like
in the world.
Everybody there.
Yeah, so...
Because, you've got, what like, big publishers, labels, stations, bands, like, managers, like, any really role you can think of in music is there. And when you were there and meeting those kinds of people, were you aware of all the different kind of facets of music beforehand? Or was that where you got your intro to, like, oh, there's, like, we say the music industry, but there's really, like, 20 industries within music? What did that experience look like for you?
It was a lot of discovering those little facets because like I remember just kind of following around like my boss Rob and our like project manager CJ, and he's like, cool, yeah, we're meeting with these people, this is in relation to publishing, we're meeting with these people because this might help with this. And I was like, what? I thought I was just supposed to do stuff with press and like try and see new bands. Like, I mean, it was definitely that too, but it was like so overwhelming at that point.
I bet.
But it was definitely like, cool, let's throw you in. And I mean, that's how you have to learn sometimes. So.
And how did that influence your decision to continue working in music and then eventually move to Seattle?
Yeah. So I left Saddle Creek and then I was like, maybe I want to get into other facets. Eventually, like I worked at a law firm thinking I would want to get into music licensing because it's an interesting area. And I was like, had a weird interest in like legal side of things. But then I was like, oh, okay. Oh, I miss radio. And what was funny is in this law firm in Minneapolis, I would always turn on KEXP. I would just always turn on the shows and like I'd always listen to John and Cheryl and like because the office like they're like, Abby, you're a DJ, you do this, like you curate. I'm like, okay, I'll turn on KEXP. And then one day I came out to Seattle visiting my friends, and it was one of my friends Nate who worked with me at Saddle Creek, and he's just like, hey, like you're sick of Minneapolis? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I am. And he's like, well, we need a new roommate next month. And the owner of Sonic Boom Records, he's moving to Minneapolis. So we need a new employee at Sonic Boom. And I was like, what?
That's wild.
And then he's like, so think about it. And so I came back and I was like, and I had done a tour of KEXP. And also like, there was some Sub Pop like little festival going on and Mudhoney was playing.
Oh,
and
wow.
Like I was like, this is Seattle, this is cool. Oh, and I saw like Destroyer play like at, it was like Hilliard's, like when that beer place used to be there. And it was like Dude York right before they got signed.
Nice.
And then the Bell game out of Vancouver, and I was just like, dang, Seattle's awesome. Like, uh-huh. It's really refreshing. And although I love Minneapolis, I was just, you know, when you're in a place for a long time, it's nice to, especially, like, I've been in the Midwest my whole life.
Right.
And I was just like, you know, this seems really like the universe is like, here's your job, here's a place to live, go. So I went and, like, yeah, started working at Sonic Boom Records, and then really quickly, like, kind of fell into everything that was a little bit of a reflection of my life in Minneapolis.
Totally.
I got that internship, like, within a month of underwriting and okay. business support. So
wow. So how were you balancing that then? And I guess, what were you doing at Sonic Boom? And then, yeah, how did you then, I guess, go into underwriting? And what does that entail for those who aren't familiar?
For sure. I mean, at Sonic Boom Records, selling records. Like, that's what I was doing. And then they would let me make the displays and stuff. And I was like, yay, art projects.
Sweet.
So I was doing that. And then, yeah, I applied for that internship at KEXP because I had no idea on the business side of radio or what underwriting was. And I'm like, I don't know anything about that. And at this point I was like, I don't know if I'll ever DJ again, but maybe this is a way to, like, work in radio again. And business support was really interesting because, like, it's the, how do you reach out to your community and businesses that aren't necessarily music related, but, like, you know, that want to be a part of KEXP or a radio station in some manner and support the same values. And, you know, it's those little spots that, like, kind of run in between breaks is, like, you know, KEXP is brought to you by Red Hook, like, that kind of thing. Because, you know, if you think about it in business support, people who go to Red Hook may also listen to KEXP. And I remember I was, like, fast forward, like, I actually DJ some Red Hook events in the summer because it's
awesome.
Kind of like a cool partnership because, you know, like, I just never thought of business as, like, oh, you have to think about all these different little facets of, like, yeah, just because this is a business, it doesn't mean it can relate to, it, like, can't relate to music. So that was cool.
And they got the, and you're talking about the one right by Safeco, right?
Oh,
the Red Hook? Or...
No, the one that's up in Capitol Hill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I love that place. Everyone's great. And then underwriting is, like, you know, kind of, it's the same thing, just, like, instead of, like, the difference between, like, commercial radio and non-commercial radio. Like, commercial radio, they can just buy a spot. And underwriting is, like, you know, it's a unique relationship that is built between the station and, like, the business that wants to support it. So it's, like, that's why you don't hear, like, people trying to sell you cars.
Right.
Like, you know, like, on KEXP. So it was a really cool world, and I got so good at Microsoft Excel sheets. Like,
oh, I bet.
Oh, my God. Goodness.
And so what did that look like between, you mentioned you weren't sure if you were going to DJ again.
Yeah.
What did that path to your current show look like?
Oh, well, also at the same time I started this internship, it's, you know, Abby, she can't do just one thing. She has to do many things.
Right.
I trained to be a DJ assistant, and there was a shift open on Monday on John's show, and I picked it up and then picked up another. And then he's like, oh, hey, you seem to be doing good at this. Do you want to just do Mondays? We just need someone consistently on Mondays. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. So I started doing that and then just kind of helping out on the show for like special days, like 6 Degrees, I remember. And yeah, I remember about, oh gosh, what was it? Like 8 months in, like it was almost a year to me, like, living here. One day, like, Morgan, who is now, like, an associate director of programming, she's, like, just became DJ manager. She's like, hey, so we're looking for fill-in hosts. You're here a lot. You like it here. And I'm like, and all I could think of in my brain was like, oh, I'm here too much. Like, do they think I'm weird? And I was like, you know, just that imposter syndrome constantly feeding to me.
Right.
And then she's like, cool. So we need you to make, like, a demo, have it be an hour, include some rotation. And then, you know, but, like, you know, add in things that you like to, but, you know, what you think KEXP sounds like. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're kind of going around that. So I freaked out in my brain, and then I was like, okay. And then one day I like went in, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to record this. And then they put me in the booth. They're like, hit record, and they're like, go. And I was like, oh my God. And yeah, I recorded it. I submitted it to them. I didn't know if they were considering anybody else. I just thought it's just a fill-in thing. It would be a miracle if they let me fill in. And then they're like, cool, we like your demo. You're going to do an hour like on the overnight. We'll see how it goes. And I was like, oh God. So I had to do it live. And I was like training with one of the overnight DJs, Sean, who's awesome. And he kind of like gave me the overview of the booth and how it runs. And it's very similar to Radio K, but they have a much better board. And, you know, I'm like, ah, upgrades. And I remember the first song I was going to play was on my computer. It didn't play. And like, there was like something wrong with like the USB configuration with my computer.
Oh no.
And bless Sean for fixing it. And then like, I just started winging it. Went just fine.
Nice.
And like I did my hour and they're like, hey, that was really good, you're funny. And I'm like great. And then and then like I remember I was sitting in like John's office and he's like, cool, so we're gonna give you a show. And I was like,
what'd you say?
What? I thought it was just this is not just for a fill-in. And he's like, ha, we're moving Evie up to the weekend, and yeah, so someone needs to fill her slot, do you want it? And I was like, yeah, I do. He's like, cool, well, if Evie doesn't want to do her show one last time this Wednesday, do you just want to do it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So like literally almost a year to the date, like I got my show, and it was like,
wow,
a roller coaster ride. Yeah. I was just like, what? So it just kind of happened. Like, I don't know.
So how does that work balancing the internship? Because I'm assuming the internship's like standard business hours would be
more
of what you're doing. And then going from that to, okay, now I'm doing a 1 a.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah, well, gig. What was good is, like, my internship ended shortly after. It was a year-long internship, but, like, they had adjusted my hours, like, accordingly. They're like, Abby, we know you don't sleep. Like, like, we'll move this.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so it was nice. Like, the year it ended, and then I took on another internship there doing morning show producing because I have a huge interest in radio producing. So yeah, I was just constantly juggling things
because
that is me, as you see.
Yeah. So I guess the biggest question is, how do you manage that? And do you sleep, or is that just not a thing?
The rumor is that I don't sleep. My listeners constantly tweet at me and they're like,
go to bed.
They're like, she doesn't sleep, she doesn't need it. And I'm like, I do sleep. But I don't know, I've always been this way. Like, ever since I was like 9 and doing like children's theater stuff, I'd like go to school, rehearse, and then like, I don't know, I just can't. I somehow manage it.
Yeah.
I'm very organized, at least bless Google Calendar for organizing my life. But I mean, every once in a while, things fall into chaos, but isn't that life?
Yeah, that's everything. That's incredible, though. Yeah. I don't think many people would be able to balance one, if not two, of those things.
Yeah, so, yeah.
What is something that people don't know about radio? Like something that they might not expect for those that are interested in working in it, I guess, what's a good behind the scenes tidbit for them to know? Like, if you're going to do this.
I guess a good behind the scenes thing is never, if things are going into chaos, don't let the audience know. Cause like, I mean, I think that's just like a good thing to know. Like, we have this automation system called Dalit, and you know, sometimes it breaks down and like, I like quickly have to go over to my computer. And if you hear like a little goof up in my transition, I'm not going to tell you.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I don't want you to know. Like, I think it's like, you know, the behind the scenes is like, you could be freaking out, but you know, you got to hold it together. And even if you are freaking out and let the audience know, sometimes it's nice to have that human moment.
Mm-hmm.
But, I guess what I'm trying to say is there is so much more than just pressing play on a track.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing traffic. You're trying to remain on time within like your show and you're also trying to hit rotation. And when I say rotation, it's very different at KEXP in that we have a lot of options. Like, most radio stations are heavy, medium, light. That's where, like, the songs are. But what's great is we have so much to pick from. And people are like, oh, it's not picked for you. I'm like, no. Like, if I don't like the new DJ Shadow, even though I love it, like, I'm not going to play it. Like, you know, and that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I'm printing playlist reports to make sure I'm not repeating things.
That's awesome.
You know, like, what John has played. Like, when I would sit in for the midday show, whatever John has played, I'm like, I don't want to play it in my show. So
that's great, because then, yeah, the AAA radio, you're hearing, oh, this is the new single that's gone to market. You're going to hear it.
Yeah.
On the hour.
Exactly.
The whole day.
And with KEXP, you'll never have that. Mm-hmm. So
that's very cool. Is that like a, I think I actually know the answer to this question, but is that like a station-wide mindset as well, of like all the DJs are like, we're going to do our own thing. We're going to make sure listeners aren't hearing repeats.
Well, it's
not necessarily
just like,
ever, but like,
I mean, it's just like, it's also like, I can't quite cite it correctly, but there's like an FCC rule too, to like, you can't play like a certain amount, can't play a certain amount of artists back to back or songs.
Oh, interesting.
You
know? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like, and also we just want to keep it fresh. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally print like a playlist report where it's like, last 4 hours. 'Cause, you know, I think it is just kind of a station mindset. Like, we're DJs. We're really good at what we do. We know more than just that one song. So, you know.
Yeah. Have you ever had it where you printed that report and you're like, dang it, I was hoping to do.
Oh, all the time. Yeah. All the time. Like, I joke with, because like, Troy would sometimes sub after me and he does the afternoons, and it would be like, and they do the last 8 hours.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, cause they don't want to repeat anything, you know, during the morning and midday. And then he would like come into the booth and be like, Abby, I wanted to play that. And I was just like, you should have told me, Troy. Like, it's always an ongoing joke, but that happens all the time.
Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah.
And what is your music curation process look like now? You know, when you're growing up, you're going to these record stores, you're looking at all these blogs. You're also just very busy now. So what is your like search look like?
What's funny is like, I don't look at blogs anymore, but that kind of came from my college experience. Like when the Pitchfork review ruled, like I remember I was on a panel in New York about it. And they're like, what do you do to find your new music? And I'm like, well, I sure don't read Pitchfork or any other blogs, because I don't want someone to make up my mind for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll listen to it and I'll let you know.
Yeah.
And I still have that mindset today. Like, I there's some records where I'm like, that got a bad review. Like, people would come into Sonic Boom and tell me, well, I don't want to buy it because it got a 4 on Pitchfork. And I'm like, that's dumb. You can think for yourself. Like,
yeah.
You know, take a listen. You probably might like it. But, like, my curation is still, like, the same way. I still go to record stores and I crate dig all the time because I DJ out in the city a lot, too. Uh-huh. And I'm always digging online, and there's, like, certain labels that I also, like, I'm like, oh, I know they always release something I like.
Yeah.
And then I'm just constantly listening to things coming in my email, and it's really all over the place now because there's so many different ways to get your music out there.
Yeah. At the end of the day, or after you've done a show, are you still like going and listening to music, or what does that look like? Are you ever like, okay, I've, you know, heard all those reviews, like, great, that segment's over, I'm gonna go listen to the next set of whatever it may be?
Yeah, like just prep for the next show,
or
like,
yeah, I phrased that really poorly, but just like your own like Spotify or something like that. Like,
yeah, I'm always like constantly throwing on like different, like, I guess after my show, sometimes I do a cleansing is what I say. Like, I just straight up listen to like really hard, like techno and house lately.
Nice.
Like, I'll listen to curated mixes, like from like some of my favorite DJs. Like, I was recently listening to like an Eris Drew mix. They're amazing. And, yeah, but I'm always listening to new music. 'Cause even with those DJ mixes, I'll be like, like the most annoying thing for like a DJ is like track ID. And like, but in my brain, I'm like, ooh, track ID. Like, <Yeah. laughs> but I'm always listening. I'm throwing on Spotify or my iTunes or whatever's haunting like my SoundCloud that I've like put aside to listen to later.
So. Nice. That's very cool.
Yeah.
And so I guess, how does that impact what like shows you go to? Because mm-hmm. you're getting so much all the time. Like even as just someone who enjoys the local music scene, I'm like, yeah. Oh shoot, there's 6 shows I could go to tonight.
Oh gosh.
Like how do you figure out what you're going to do? And then, yeah. What's that look like for you? Cause like last night you had a show that started at midnight, for example,
yeah, exactly.
that you went to. So like, how are you A, finding these things, unless that's a secret, and then B, yeah. How do you like decide what you're going to do?
Yeah, I try and like make a list like for that month. I'm like, okay, I definitely have to go to this. And also I'm crazy and I will travel to different places like for shows. Like last month I went to LA because Caroline Polachek was playing and I loved Chairlift.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, oh, she's only doing a show in LA, not up here. I have to go.
Wow.
And I am guilty of going to LA frequently for shows.
That's like, very cool though.
Yeah. But like, I don't know, like I definitely probably burn the candle at both ends when I go to shows, but I do take breaks sometimes. That's but like good. Local wise, I try and see as much as possible. And I've recently started helping book some stuff at the Timber Room.
Okay,
and like,
very
so
cool.
I'm just like, cool. Like I'll help them get in and they can, and then I like have an excuse to see like certain bands live and yeah. then. Yeah, I don't know. It's really hard to say. I just try and see as much as possible because like people are like, I don't understand how you have this passion still. And I'm like, I just do. The drive yeah. is just there.
For sure.
Yeah.
I guess noting that drive, like what in an ideal world, what's like your dream role right now that you're like, because you mentioned you were interested in like radio producing and stuff like that. Like, I guess a better thing to ask you is what is it you're not doing that right now that you're like, I would love to do this someday.
Yeah. I mean, I love everything that I'm doing. Definitely. I want to keep doing everything that I'm doing now.
Just add another thing to the list.
You know, another thing, I would love to do more music supervision. I did a little bit when I was in Minneapolis, like the Gap campaign reached out to me and they're like, you seem to like know what the kids like.
Yeah.
And like, I remember like trying to recommend them Haim and Mac DeMarco for their campaign.
Uh-huh.
They didn't pick them.
Yeah.
Which is funny because like Mac is so huge now and so is Haim. Right. But, you know, I think it'd be fun to do that again. And like, oh gosh, it would be so cool to just like pick a song that goes with like a movie scene. And
yeah.
you're like, yeah, I felt that because I picked it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Do you mind actually highlighting what music supervision is for those
oh,
who don't
for
know?
Sure.
And then how that differs from like a music director because they're
yeah.
completely different things.
Yeah. Music supervisors are people who pick music for like any like media, like different medias, I guess you could say, like for movies, for TVs, for commercials. And yeah, they also pay usually a very nice sum of money to license that song for that particular moment for a particular amount of time. Because mm-hmm. Like when I was at Saddle Creek, for instance, constantly had requests for like people being like, but can I use that Bright Eyes song, First Day of My Life, to end this indie movie? Like,
yeah.
you know, like, and it becomes a negotiation. It's a bit more of that business side of things, but also it helps artists so much.
For real.
Especially yeah. now.
Yeah, it's like a license now can do more than
yeah.
50 million streams can do.
Yeah.
In some cases.
Like, for instance, like, I haven't had much part in this, but, like, the band I do help manage actors out of Vancouver, BC, like, they just got a song picked up from Netflix, like Lock and Key series.
Oh wow, and that's what their home screen is showing right now.
Yeah,
that TV show.
Exactly.
Wow,
so they're like
really
in
cool.
there also like a poster of theirs is like in one of the scenes and I was like, what?
That
and
is so cool.
Like they've been picked for like other shows too and it's like my mom will be like, that band you work with, oh my god, I just saw them, like I heard their song. So it's insane how, because people find music that way too. Mm-hmm. Like, look at the Pretty in Pink soundtrack. Like, all those bands, like, you, like, yeah, you have that Molly Ringwald movie, but you remember those songs.
Totally.
And I think it would be so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, to do that.
And then, so you mentioned actors who you're working with. Do you mind touching on how you kind of made your foray into that?
Yeah, so actors hit me up, gosh, maybe it's been 2 years now. I have no sense of time, to be honest. And they sent me, like, a couple singles, and they're like, oh, hey, we think this might be a good fit for your show. And I remember my friend Charlize also sending it to me, and she's like, I think you'd like these guys. And, like, I played their songs. It was, like, L'Appel du Vide. And I was like, this is amazing. Played the crap out of it. Like, because, you know, sometimes when you hear a song, you're like, I'm so excited. I need to tell everybody. Mm-hmm. And so I played that. And then I'm like, please let me know when that debut is out. And they're like, oh, totally. And then they were playing a show here, but I was, like, I was abroad during that time and didn't get to see them. And then they hit me up asking, like, oh, hey, you play Slug, can we get a session? And, like, I was like, oh, you know, maybe if you, like, talk to Cheryl and stuff, maybe you can do it. And then John gave them an in-studio.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Like, I finally got to see them live. And they reached out to me, and they were just like, hey, you're, like, really nice and support us a lot. Like, you're really good at this, because I would help them find shows. And, like, I'm like, you should hit up these people. I think this would be a good fit. So they're like, you know, you'd be good at band management. Have you ever thought about managing? And I'm like, oh, I'm like, it seems like something else I could add to my list, you know?
I have 35 things. 36.
36 sounds like a good solid number. And then, like, so Jason Corbett, the lead singer, was like, yeah, like, let's talk about it. So, yeah, like, I was constantly bouncing between here and Vancouver because I love that city and their music scene's crazy. So, like, I was up there, and he's like, cool, yeah, let's talk about this. And what's funny is, you know, I'm not, like the standard band manager. Like, I help with, like, my strengths, I guess. I'm still figuring out what I'm doing managing-wise because I feel like I've been asked a lot, like, oh, you seem to know what you're doing. And I'm like, I'm just helping with the team because we are, like, a team. Like, like, that whole band is so talented also outside of music. So, yeah, it's been kind of helping them get initiatives. Like, I remember they did Band in Seattle here.
But sweet.
But, you know, like, they've also, like, have, like, gotten Part-Time Punks is this amazing show that's, like, on KXLU down in LA.
Okay.
They got a session there.
Wow.
And it's just, like, kind of just helping connect where I can and create, like, you know, marketing and press assets, which is what I did at Saddle Creek, and being like, hey, I think this will help. And it's really helped them. They're so, they're killing it. And they released that record, like, a couple years ago, and it's still constantly selling.
And it's working for them.
Yeah. And physical media selling these days is in... You're like, what?
Yeah, like, that's not supposed to work.
But yeah, and it's working for them. And yeah, they're getting booked for a lot of exciting things right now that I cannot mention. But
fair.
Stay tuned to that. Yeah.
That brings up a really interesting point that I think we were talking about before we actually started the interview, which was the value of a label per se, like here versus overseas. And a lot of what you're talking about is this like team mentality.
Totally.
And from my perspective, the labels now are more of like an a la carte services in a way. And it's really just, okay, we've got a team already built in house. I don't know where I was going with that tangent. I was like, it just sounds like that team mentality is really interesting. And even talking to Lee a couple of weeks ago, about management, what was really interesting is as we're talking more band managers on here, it really is that team aspect. It's like, that's what's important. And I think some artists, the misconception is, oh, someone comes on to manage, my job's done now.
And it's definitely not that.
The bands that are finding success, it's no, we're building a team and we're all collaborating and leaning into each other's strengths. And I think that's where the label used to be super valuable was, hey, look, you're really good at all this stuff. We're great at all the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. But now we've got like DistroKid and there's all these services that you can leverage and then people that can execute on your behalf.
Yeah.
I guess, would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, and what's interesting is I think just the structure of the music industry right now is just constantly in flux, so that like labels, like they definitely still have those aspects, and there's still some value. I'd say there's still value in having a label. It just totally depends on like where you're at and where you're shooting for. And like actors, for instance, they're on a label, Artifact Records. So like, it's like kind of known to be like, you know, like this cool industrial, like post-punk label. And they're based between like Iceland and Canada.
Oh,
and,
very cool.
Yeah. And like Kaylin Mikla is on there, and they're insane. They did a really sweet KEXP session not too long ago. And yeah, but what's interesting is other countries give funding to those labels too.
Mm-hmm.
Like Artifact, definitely, like I'm sure they get Canadian funding. Like,
right.
I'm trying to think of like other ones up there, like Arts and Crafts and more. Like, you will see in the back of like certain Canadian like records, like they'll be like, and this is like been brought to you by Factor Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Brought by the government. I'm like, what? And yeah. I wish that the happened in the
pushing the band.
Yeah, and Iceland does that too with their music export. And I just was like, wow, that's nice. Yeah. And like, because I worked with some Canadian bands when I was at Saddle Creek, and you would see the difference, and you're like, wow, I really wish like the U.S. supported the arts more. Yeah.
And it's really interesting to your point of like the value, yeah, of those labels. It's when you're building that team, looking for what you need and like how you can actually partner versus someone, yeah, just like selling you a grandiose vision. Like, okay, what do we actually need? Like, if I'm already speaking generally here, but
yeah,
like if someone is already working on something and doing it super well, it's like, ask yourself the question, does it make sense to have this brand new person come in and take it away versus, oh, how about you bring in someone on the team that can like, we're not great at graphic design. Let's have someone that's great at graphic design come help us out or join the team.
Exactly.
And like actually just round out the team versus throw things off the plate for the sake of throwing them off the plate.
Yeah.
But,
and like, I think more and more it's like, that's becoming the thing. It's like, you just got to build a team because there are so many different changes flying at you all the time. Like, you know, for instance, that vinyl thing, like, well, that one vinyl plant recently like burned down, and
yeah,
it's going to delay
terrible.
A lot of releases. So what do you do if you don't have that access to physical media? Like,
mm-hmm,
you just always constantly like need to have a team to pull it together for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Levi was on the podcast from Black Belt, and he was talking about how the business in general, tangent, but just got, he was just like, everything's delayed.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I think he said it was like one of two major vinyl plants that like he knows of that like, mm-hmm, actually produce in mass.
Yeah.
And it was like, and it's crazy to think about too, because you're seeing this resurgence in vinyl.
Oh, for sure.
And then that happens, you're just like, whoa, like didn't see that coming. And a really interesting juxtaposition between like the digital world and the physical, where digital, you're like, a server goes down on Spotify, like, okay, it's a bummer, I can't,
yeah,
access this, but it'll be back up once they fix it, in theory. I hope I just didn't like put that energy out and something wild happens.
Oh gosh. But yeah, it's like, hey internet, stay alive.
Yeah.
No Fight Club stuff, please.
Exactly.
Like
but yeah, I guess now that you've been like working and managing bands, what has that taught you about music? Or I guess I should say how has that changed your perspective on music, like,
yeah,
working with artists in that capacity?
Working with artists, it's been kind of exciting because I'm like, oh, I've worked in all of these different like areas, and now I can, like, I know what I'm good at, and I know I, like, for instance, like, actors or Tiny Deaths out of LA, they're like, I have this vision, but it's so great when a band's like, I'm not good at this one thing, though. Cool, can you do that? Like,
yeah,
it's really cool to see where you can fill in the gaps.
Right.
Yeah, like, right now, with Tiny Deaths out of LA, like, it's like, cool, how do we build this cool social media presence? Because gosh, that's like a whole nother branding thing you have to think about,
mm-hmm,
now for bands. And you know, I totally understand when bands are like, ah, like, how do you sell yourself on social media? Like, I just, here's the record, please listen, reviews, like,
mm-hmm,
it's like, but now you have to like build this literal, there's a different way for your audience to reach you, and it's a much more personal one. And,
mm-hmm,
sometimes that can be a little alarming.
Yeah, especially for like private people, like some artists, like, I don't talk about this thing, which is why I write music. Yeah. It's like to get this out.
Exactly.
I'm not trying to like message back and forth, which is an interesting, to your point, mm-hmm. conundrum. That's the package now.
Yeah, like actors really likes to interact with their fans. They have this like fan club group called the Academy, and they all
brilliant.
It's like really cute.
The
and
actors in the Academy.
Yeah.
That's genius.
I know. And I was like, but they like all the fans like talk back and forth on them, and like the band members like interact as much as they'd like. And but it's like it's another cool community as well. And I, you know, I never thought it would exist again, like, yeah. at least like in a fan club kind of way.
Totally.
Cause I don't know about you. Did you have like little fan club cards, like of bands when you were younger?
I never had the cards, but I still join the fan clubs.
Yeah.
Like, I know people don't like getting all the emails, but I get super excited when anything comes out. And selfishly, it's like 25% off tickets or something. You get them before everybody. Like, I get guaranteed that I'm going to go to this show.
Yeah. Like, and that's really exciting.
That. Yeah.
It's like, and I just didn't think that they existed or worked anymore.
For real.
And, you know, it's really cool that that can still exist in like the digital space.
Yeah. 100%. So you're working with the two acts now, I guess. What was it that drew you to them? Because like we said, you got a million things going mm-hmm. on. What made you, and you kind of talked about a little bit with actors,
yeah.
but what made you intrigued? And then why did you want to work with them? Like, what made you go, oh,
mm-hmm.
like, instead of saying like, yeah, you know what? Love you all, but I'm good. I'm doing a lot of stuff. You were like, no, band management. Like, I want to invest my time in these artists.
For sure. Actors, everyone in that band, we all have the same energy. Like, I'm very extroverted, and I'm like, cool, I'm a really go-getter, and I'm a bit of a workaholic, and so are they.
Yeah.
Those guys went on like a crazy like 2-year tour basically, and I'm like, please sleep.
And if you're telling them to sleep, then
yeah, I'm like, if I'm telling you to sleep, what's up? Like, yeah, we just have the same energy, and we're constantly like spitfiring ideas, and I just loved that energy, and I knew I could work within that. And like, I'm like, cool, if they're as driven as me, you know, this must be good. And I also could see like a vision, like, of, how do I describe it, like I'm like, oh, I could see where you're going, like, yeah. if I just add my little sprinkles here and there, I think this could help you push things along,
right?
Yeah. And then with Tiny Deaths, Claire, she's so talented. Like, mm-hmm. I knew her from Minneapolis, and she used to be in other projects like The Chalice, which had like Sophia Aris and like Lizzo and like,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, like there was like previous projects and stuff that they were in, and I always really enjoyed her work. And she moved out to the West Coast, and we kept in touch. And she released a new record, and I was like, oh my gosh, Claire, this is so good. And she had like reached out to me being like, I'm trying to find a manager, I just can't, you know, it's a lot. And she's like, I'm also trying to work in LA. And she's like, what do you think, do you know anybody? And then I'm like, I got time. I'm like, you know, and yeah, so I've been trying to and what's cool is it's like it's very different from actors in that like Claire is also like a visual artist. She's a fantastic photographer, and it's like, how do you, you know, tie that into her vision as well? And her songs are very personal as well.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool to like try and create, you know, branding. I hate that word, branding,
yeah.
but like, you know, create like a story around that. So yeah,
that's very cool. I guess before I, we like wrap things up here, I guess, going like big picture, like you've been really ingrained in music for so long. Like, why do you work in music?
Oh, I just, there is something just, there's this amazing writer, Jessica Hopper. She was out of Minneapolis, and she went to Chicago, and she became an amazing like writer. She wrote, I think she was like editor in chief. I can't remember off the top of my head, but like editor of like Pitchfork for a long time, and wrote for various music magazines that I loved. And she wrote this book, like the first book of female rock criticism, or female like of rock criticism by a female. We'll have to check me on that. But she wrote, like, there is, like, this void in me that cannot be filled unless it's, like, filled by music. And I'm like, I get that so hard. And, like, that is true. Like, I have tried to leave music before, and then I just felt empty. And, like, there's something so great about music and community and how music just literally just... Oh, I can put on this song. I feel better. It's therapy. Like, it's just all encapsulating. And I love the community that it brings.
Right. Mm-hmm. I guess on the flip side, like, when you're working, you're doing your show, like, what do you hope people get out of the music or the show that you're putting on?
I guess I hope that they get a little bit of an escape from their reality. Because, I mean, yeah, reality kind of sucks right now. Let's be real. But that's what I was always, like... going for. And I was literally like at First Avenue back in Minneapolis every day of the week, like the door people knew me, and like but I was always there being like, this is my little escape, this is a cool outlet and expression. And I think sometimes people get so in their head about things, this is like a release. So I hope people get a release, but also find, you know, a community in that as well.
Definitely. And then I guess to wrap things up, I'm just going to do a series of preferences. So I'm just going to give you some things and you're just going to, I'm going to have you fire away.
Okay.
So traveling to Vancouver's music scene or LA?
Ooh, I'm going to have to say Vancouver.
Right on. Do you mind, it's supposed to be a rapid fire, but do you mind just expanding on why? Like, why is it so exciting up there?
Oh, well, I was kind of like living between there and Seattle for a minute, and like there... the energy there, there's something different about the energy there. LA's a bit more spread out. I love everything in LA, but the local music that's happening in Vancouver is so exciting to me.
Yeah.
Like, and all the venues, like the Fox and Redgate, like they're still dealing a lot of the same stuff that we are, like gentrification wise in Seattle, but they're like, that's dumb. We'll just play in this coffee shop. And I don't know. There's just so much exciting stuff happening. Like, oh, okay, I'm going to go to this coffee shop and see some, like Minimal Violence play, which they're insane, like insanely great.
Yeah. So. What's more exciting, discovering a new band or helping break a band?
Discovering, yeah.
Totally, yeah, I guess one's more immediate gratification.
Yes, more. Exactly. I was like, discovering, definitely.
Would you rather help a band create like a media plan or the art?
Ooh, media plan. I'm very good at the media plan part.
Yeah. and then do you prefer pitching for like reviews or radio play?
Radio play.
Right on. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This was so much fun. I'm so glad we made this happen.
Yes.
I guess, yeah. How can people find you? Like,
yeah.
What kind of projects you got going on? How can people support it? And then how can people support the show that you're on?
For sure. I'm on social media, like at a certain Abby. Abby is spelled ABBIE. And I really just love the band A Certain Ratio, and that's why I have that name. And I guess follow me there. I DJ around Seattle and also in Vancouver, and I'm picking up some gigs in Portland too.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm kind of all over the place. So
I have to have your own tour, yeah, and then you're gonna be doing your show on the road, touring, managing other bands.
When I release my side techno project, I gotta add 37 onto
there
it.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. 37.
And then
40 by the end of the year.
Oh, I'm sure by the end of the week. like it's most likely. Yeah, and then yeah, just follow me there. Like all of my projects, I'm constantly tweeting about there because. Promoting shows, and then also check out Actors and Tiny Deaths. Yes. They have a lot of fun things coming up soon that I wish I could just be like, this is everything now. But
be sure to blast it when that's the
awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers. That was Daughter by Tiny Deaths. Be sure to check them out and follow them on their socials at Tiny Deaths, just as it sounds. Also, follow Actors on Twitter at Actors the Band. They're going to be going on tour with the KVB and hitting Seattle on Sunday, April 12th at the Vera Project. Tickets are on sale now. Hope to see you there. And last but not least, grab your tickets for Made for Music Live featuring Katie Couple and Dame on Tuesday, April 7th at Ballard Homestead. As always, if you dig what you hear, please be sure to rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and I will see you next time.